This is an interview with Emmy DeLand, Senior Vice President of Strategy at New York Presbyterian Hospital. Emmy, thank you very much for joining us today. I wanted to ask you a little bit about where New York Presbyterian Hospital stands in this new global marketplace for medical tourism.
Well, thank you very much, Val, for inviting me. We have spent the last couple of years reviewing our strategy as it relates to medical tourism, and clearly we have a long legacy of providing health care to New Yorkers, to the national landscape, and internationally. But we recently refocused our energies around the international landscape because of the world becoming so global and because we were very interested in being a player in the developing global economy, and especially in the last 10 years, the market for medical tourism, the market for developing hospitals overseas with India, the Middle East, China, Eastern Europe, becoming more and more interested in developing more robust hospitals, we were very interested in maintaining a strong marketplace for actually providing care for those patients who wanted to come to the U.S. to get advanced tertiary and quaternary care. We felt that there was still very much a market for tertiary quaternary care being delivered for those patients who globally wanted to get the most advanced medical care. And I'm still very confident that the U.S. provides the most advanced medical care, whether it's minimally invasive surgical techniques, whether it's infertility treatments, or whether you look at prenatal and prenatal diagnostics and treatments.
So, in your estimation, what are different countries really looking to America for? Are they looking to have us help them create hospital systems in their own countries that are perhaps affiliated with our hospitals? Or are they looking for us to open up a pipeline for their citizens to get care here? Is it a mix of both? What are the size of those different kinds of needs and markets, do you think?
Great question. There is no question that globally there is an interest into improving the healthcare infrastructure, especially in the Middle East, India, China. There has been an increasing interest into improving the infrastructure of those countries. If you look in the Middle East, you look at the spending on healthcare as a percentage of their GDP, it is very low. It's as low as 1.5% of their GDP is spent on healthcare. That's in contrast to countries like the United States that's hovering around 16%. In Europe, the average is about 9%. So there is a great need for developing infrastructure in those emerging countries, and in the case of the Middle East, there's an enormous amount of wealth to be able to develop that infrastructure. But the nationals that live in the Middle East, if we just focus a moment on the Middle East, those nationals, the government pays for them to receive their health care, and each of those countries have a committee that reviews applications by the nationals. Not by those individuals that are just working in the countries but are not nationals in those countries. And they actually will pay for individuals to receive care in principally England or the United States of America. And they will pay for the care, and they will actually give a per diem for the family members who go over to take care of them while they are overseas. But clearly those countries would like to develop the kind of infrastructure and healthcare so that they could reduce the need to send out their citizens to receive care outside of their respective countries.
So the reason why they're not spending that much of their GDP on healthcare is that they don't have the infrastructure to offer it. You think maybe it's not that it isn't a priority, or they don't think that healthcare is important, or there's some other reason for it?
I don't think I can comment whether it wasn't important 10 years ago, but definitely since 9/11, there has been an increased emphasis, at least in the Middle East, of developing infrastructure, recognizing as they've had incredible wealth, that there has been an increasing interest in developing the infrastructure locally rather than having to export the care of those people.
And when you say infrastructure, does that include educational infrastructure like medical schools and training for doctors and so on, rather than just the hospital facilities and so on?
Certainly it in Qatar, they have the Weill Cornell Medical College. It's affiliated with New York Presbyterian Hospital, opened its medical school at the bequest of the country, and is offering Weill Cornell medical degrees. They graduated their first class in May of 2008. 16 individuals graduated from the medical school. There is talk in Abu Dhabi, in Alim, of Johns Hopkins developing a medical school. So there is definitely an interest in improving the quality of their medical education and their postgraduate medical education as well. But along with it, they are severely underbedded in the Middle East. They have a very young population. The population is, I believe the median age is somewhere south of 30. So it's a very young population. However, in recent statistics that I've seen, 75% of the population is considered, if you look at the body mass index, the BMI, either overweight or obese, and they face an increasing range of chronic conditions associated with the overweight and obesity challenge that they have. I believe that 25%, 26% of the population actually suffers from type 2 diabetes.
Wow.
So there is a need for both improvement in the delivery system as well as the educational system. And that's part of why patients are coming to the United States to receive care, and we're privileged enough to take care of those people, some of them. And that's also why they're interested in exporting or importing our expertise to try to improve the quality of their healthcare system.
And in addition to the medical school that was built in affiliation with Weill Cornell and New York Presbyterian, what other initiatives is Columbia currently involved in on a global scale?
Well, Columbia University has multiple collaborations globally as it relates to education and training. In terms of, you know, Their doctors, their faculty, travel all over the world providing education and training opportunities. They don't deliver healthcare services. Their New York Presbyterian, the hospital, actually delivers the healthcare services. And to date, the hospital has affiliations with several hospitals globally. But we are just beginning to, probably in 2009, we'll probably begin to provide management services internationally as well.
And what would that look like? A management service, there would be a team of folks?
There would be a team of folks that will be located in a country that will be most likely, they come in two forms. They either will be a greenfield opportunity where there's a new hospital being built and we will help do the design of it, we will help actually staff it, and we will then run it It's called, we'll have the C-suite, so it's all the CEO, the CIO, the COO. We will provide that level of management services, quality services, training, patient-centered care. So it's a full suite, and it's a greenfield. The alternative is that we'll be providing management services to an existing facility and be in all likelihood trying to improve the quality of care in that particular facility, which will include developing human resources, you know, services, IT, improving their IT, improving their general hospital management services. Again, there'll be training, and there certainly will be collaboration amongst the physicians to teleradiology, other teleconferencing capabilities as well.
Now, is the idea for the C-suite individuals to stay there indefinitely or to go there and build a replacement team to take over, and then they would go on and repeat that success story in another greenfield situation?
It depends on how long it takes to improve the quality of care, but in the ideal scenario, it will probably be, in some cases, it will be to train the local management and to then go on potentially to another one of their subspecialty hospitals to be able to turn that around, and then have a long-term association, a collaboration with a place like New York Presbyterian and Columbia and Cornell. The alternative is just as you said, a turnaround situation where we'd actually come in, train the trainers, and then move on. The way we look at it is that we can't provide a whole host of these. We can't be a tenant healthcare, you know, because at the end of the day, we're very cautious about our brand and how our brand and how we utilize our brand. And we're also very cautious of the limitations on our own management capabilities and, moreover, our medical staff. Some of our medical staff spend a lot of time in the air right now, and we certainly don't want them to spend more time traveling. So we're very much aware of the limited nature of this service, and we need to make sure that we pick the right places to do it in so that we can improve the quality of care.
So it sounds like a careful and cautious franchise opportunity in a way.
Yes, and you know, franchise brings a very, you know, we've gone through a very interesting exercise about branding and making sure that how anybody uses our brand is appropriate to the level of control that we have over it and the quality of care. So how we look at it is that you can use a collaboration with New York Presbyterian on the stationery, and once you've really shown that you've gotten JCI approval, you can then look at maybe having it on a sign, so that we can be very cautious as to how the New York Presbyterian name is used.
Now, would these foreign ventures be subject to the same American quality control measure, the Joint Commission, that sort of thing?
Right. The Joint Commission actually has international standards,
yeah.
And certainly they would be held to the Joint Commission standards at a minimum, and then we would like to see them actually develop standards that are much more closely aligned to the Joint Commission accreditation, the JCHO, which actually has more stringent standards. And so we would like to eventually have them have the New York Presbyterian standards, our own standards for quality. But that will take time. That is a long-term challenge.
Indeed. Who are the other players in the space?
The other players on the space are ones that are very familiar to you. They're Johns Hopkins. There's Partners, which is the Mass General and the Harvard Hospitals. There's Cleveland Clinic. Mayo has actually mostly kept in the United States. They're not branched out particularly abroad. And then the University of Pittsburgh and Methodist Hospital in Houston, amongst many others. But those are the ones that are the primary academic medical centers. In the West Coast, you have obviously a couple who are more geared towards Asia, and you have Duke that also has an international presence, although not a large, and it's more on the educational front than in the delivery of services.
Now, are you concerned at all with the recent problems with our global economy in terms of potentially slowing down the progress on this front?
So the good news is there's a lot of demand for it. The challenge is that if they're government-sponsored, they could be slowing down the investment, but the need is so obviously there that it will happen. Whether it's slightly delayed, there will definitely be the investment in improving their healthcare infrastructure. If it's a private, for-profit venture, right now, unless they already had their credit, it's a challenging time for anybody to borrow any money. Although in a down economy, healthcare is still, considered to be a reasonable commodity. And there's actually some interest on the private equity firms of actually investing in healthcare if they're going to invest in anything, if they have, obviously, any liquidity left. Short term, I think it's a challenge for everybody. I think long term, I don't think it's going to change the interest in improving their infrastructure. And, there's a great deal of discussion on medical tourism, which is what you asked me originally, and there are projections by some of the consulting firms that medical tourism is going to increase to, 6 million people are going to go leave the United States to get their health care globally. And frankly, we're not worried about medical tourism, United States citizens leaving the United States to get their health care in India or Singapore or the Middle East, because the kind of care that we provide is in the tertiary, quaternary nature, that we're not concerned that that's a competitive force that we need to worry about. We're quite confident that the patients who are seeking our care will remain for the foreseeable meaning the next couple of decades, interested in getting care in the United States.
As a final question, I wonder if you have a sort of vision of where we might be in a couple of decades, perhaps, in terms of just the globalization of healthcare. What do you imagine what is the end game, so to speak, for New York Presbyterian?
Well, now my crystal ball is really having its difficulties. It's going to take the biggest challenge globally is getting the quality medical staff, the nursing staff that's needed to really run tertiary, quaternary healthcare. And I think your time frame is probably right on, that it will take 20 years to really have an impact on the globalization of healthcare, that they will have the necessary training to have the kind of medical educational standards that we've all had the privilege of having. And then I think it's going to be very important for us to have global outposts so that we can make sure that we are cutting edge in terms of the research. That, one of the things that are very attractive to us as we look globally is the opportunities to expand our research horizons, our clinical research horizons. And I think that there's going to be real opportunities to collaborate globally in 20 years, much more so than we have done to date. So I think you'll likely see a very robust healthcare system in China and a very robust healthcare system in India, and Europe will continue to provide, you know, outstanding medical education, and it will be interesting to see how the Middle East develops as well. I think there are more challenges in the Middle East because of the weather is a challenge. It's 130 to 40 degrees in certain months of the year. So I think that they have some real challenges in terms of developing a robust, and they have to import most of their workers from the regional area. So I think that they have actually a more of a challenge, although they have a great deal of funds to do it, and I have confidence that they'll do it. But I think the landscape globally will be very different than it is today. But it will take 20 to 30 years before it really is.